On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Morning, folks. Welcome to the Science of Sport. Craig Harper at 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Jackie Loud is in the studio. Professor Mark Fabreo. This is the show. He's also here. This is the show where we talk about all of the stuff around sport and health and wellness and performance and recovery and mindset and body stuff and anything you want to chat about that's in that space. We want you to get on board and become part of what we do for this hour. The number's 9429 1116. You know it. 0433981116 if you want to send a message. Good morning, Jackie Lauder.
Good morning, boys. How are we?
Very good. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Good morning. And you're right. You know, the weather report you did, it actually is showering out there.
Well, thank you. Thanks for confirming what we already knew. So lots to talk about today. I want to start with something for you. It's not really in the sports space.
Meaning Jackie.
Yeah, I want to start with you, Jackie, pointing at you. Oh, so we're not a visual medium. No. All right. No. Why didn't anyone
just
tell me?
Just as well.
This is in the mental health and wellness and kind of, you know, looking after yourself space, which you'll like. I went the other night and did a bit of a chat to 100 blokes at a night in Blackburn at Blackburn Primary School called Shed Night.
Oh, yeah, men's, like a men's shed.
It is. It's, I don't know if that's the same, but it's the same,
kind of concept.
It's all, and just... Like I kind of went, you know, I get a few, hey, you know, we've got no money, but can you come and talk to us? And I try and do one or two a month of those kind of for a good cause things.
Yep.
And it certainly was. And Phil and all the boys out there, what, you know, and I happily went along, but I was really impressed with just 100 blokes getting together, talking about everything from cars and sport and life to relationships and emotions and fear. And it's a really good thing. It's such a unique thing, unfortunately, see 100 men getting together. And you know, you might think, oh, there'd be a bit of, I don't know, a bit of sledging of women. Or so. It was nothing. It was amazing. It was really positive and it was a really good night. So
there's a few of them around called Men's Shed, and that is exactly the concept.
It's such
about
a good
men's
thing.
Mental health, because women naturally... We talk, like we will talk to each other and just have conversations, not always about saying, you know, we need help, but it's just about sharing and getting other people's opinions. And sometimes it can be just very simple topics, but the concept of Men's Shed is fantastic, and it's been around for a long time now, and a lot of people are forming their own little groups in their own areas, and some of them like get together and actually make stuff and do stuff for schools or communities. And others do what you did the other night, where they organise a speaker once a month and someone comes in, and I think it's fantastic.
There's lots of awareness now, Mark, around us, males and females, but looking after our emotional health. And, you know, whereas back in the day, like in my dad's generation, it wasn't something that was really spoken about too much in terms of emotional health and mental health and, you know, feelings and having conversations around that. But now... Fortunately, it's becoming the norm.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I've done something similar with men's health. I've given a few talks about men's health and about men not ignoring health niggles, so to speak. But you're right about things changing. I mean, in our father's generation, if you had some form of sadness or depression, you were told to get over it, you're Sheila. Well, there's two derogatory things in that. You're being a misogynist and you're underplaying the role of mental health in men. So, look, times have changed. I mean, I can't wait until women are heads of state, because I think we'll have less wars.
I think the other thing is too, when we're talking about men's health, it starts from when you're little boys. And where we don't let little boys, you know, boys don't cry. And you hear little kids say that all the time. And I think that's where we've got to start teaching that it's okay for boys to cry, but help them understand what is it. Is it because something's been hurt or someone's left you out? Like, there's this misconception that women are more emotional than men, and women just express it more than men, but it's human emotion.
Mm.
You guys feel it. The problem is it stays inside and eventually it's got to come out somewhere, and whether that's in your productivity, whether that's in, you know, relationships or in your workspace or in your overall physical and mental health, it's going to take an impact somewhere.
And I think we're seeing this spill into, well, this is life, but also into sport now, where finally, I mean, it's been a slow grind for you psychologists in the sporting
space.
It is. But where we're starting to go, okay, so these athletes, these AFL players, these guys and girls, these girls that are in the netball, these amazing basketballers, the Matildas, our cricketers, they're not cyborgs.
No.
They're not bodies. They have bodies, but they're not bodies. And so we, even when I was at St Kilda, which was 100 years ago, but almost the entire management of the players from a non-football perspective was all about training, progressive overload, lifting stuff, running, stretching, jumping and food, because we've just got to manage their body, because if their body's right, then they're right, then we'll get the most out of them if their body's right, with not a great level of input, if any, into their psychological or emotional management, you know, because as we all know that if the guy or the girl is not in a place emotionally or mentally where they need to be, doesn't matter what's going on physiologically, they won't get the most out of themselves from a performance level.
Yeah, and I think if you look at in elite sport particularly, they have a lot of media that will make comments about them as well. So then that adds a whole nother pressure. And then I notice when I work in teams, or even if you go and see an individual athlete and you work in with their coach, the mood of the coach impacts the mood and the productivity of the players. So it's not just now about our athletes. We're doing a lot more education of the coaches, how to actually speak to the athletes to make them feel safe, to be able to make mistakes, encourage them with their performances. We focus so much on what everyone doesn't do right. I don't think we focus enough on what they are doing right.
I mean, if you look at some coaches around the world, very successful coaches, you know, some that come to mind, well, Luke Beveridge here, and also Jurgen Klopp, who is a, you know, in the Bundesliga and now is the manager of Liverpool. They are very people-orientated coaches. And I don't know, Jackie, because I'm not the expert on basically anything, but to me it seems like as we progress and as people become more accepting of emotional difference, it's those coaches that have a lot of emotional intelligence that appear to be the coaches that are the best coaches.
Yeah, well, they manage their, I think the way they manage their staff and what they put within their programs, and it's really interesting, we've had this discussion before, but so many, you know, there's still quite a number of AFL clubs, a very, very good majority of the NRL clubs do not have a psychologist attached, so still don't, you know, address this area at all. There's lots of professional sports that don't do anything about it, and they'll just give that role to a coach. But if you're a player and your coach is the one you're supposed to go and talk to, they're also the one that decide whether you play or not. That's, you know, that's a dual relationship that's never going to sit in the best interest of the athlete.
100%. 9429 1116 if you want to get involved in the conversation, or if you want to send a message, 0433 98 1116. I want to ask both of you this question. So one of my challenges, I guess, over the years, working as like very much, and I guess the same for you, Jack, but in a different way, working with athletes and working with individuals trying to lose weight or build muscle or get into a sport or improve where they're at in their sport, has been trying to help them maximize their potential.
Yep.
You know, so whatever potential you've got, it's pretty much set, but how much of that you use is up to you. So how do we... how do we, one, and let's talk about the general population, how do we help people understand how much potential they have? Because I think a lot of people don't really know. And then two, how do we get them to exploit that, tap into it and maximize it so that they can get the most out of themselves?
Well, let me reverse the question to you first, because that's where you're spending most of your time is looking at that space. What are you doing to do... to help someone maximise their potential?
Okay, well, for me, it's funny because I look at people and I've got more faith in their ability than they have.
Yeah.
So I try to tell them my story and to get them to at least become a little bit more self-aware about their self-limiting thinking, and to get them to understand that while past achievements and behaviours are generally a pretty good indicator of the future, they're not always, they're not necessarily an indicator of potential or possibilities. So how do I get people to think differently? In a very practical sense, I get them to do something they haven't done. Because when they do something they haven't done, there's an internal shift and they go, oh, if I can, you know, like someone who goes, I'm fat, I'm unathletic, I don't have much, da da da. All, if you can take that person even over 3 or 4 months and train them up to do just a 5K run, which is for them like winning an Olympic gold medal, I see a big shift. So for me, it's a mix of the conversation but also the experiential.
I think too, when you ask somebody, apart from what they're trying to do now, so if someone says, I want to run a marathon but I just don't think I can, I move away from that a little bit at the start and say, well, let's have a look at some of the other things that you never thought you could do. How did you do those? What was your process? How did you go about it? Because everyone probably has something in their life that they never thought they would do, but have all of a sudden been able to achieve. But I think what it also highlights to them is that didn't happen overnight. So patience is something that we need to definitely work on with most people. And I think the speed of your progressions is really important. Once you get to the next step, don't just move on straight away and go, great, I now need to just keep pushing forward. Sometimes you've got to let them sit there for a week or two to prove to themselves this wasn't a fluke. I didn't just do it once. I can now do this repeatedly. When they've done that step repeatedly, then take it up to the next step. If you progress too quickly, they will not make it, because they'll lose faith and go, see, I knew I couldn't do it.
This is not really my domain, but I'll come back to something.
But it is as an athlete.
But I'll come back to something. Yes, as an athlete is how I think.
But also as a human being. I think one of the mistakes that we make in these conversations is that we go, I'm not a dietitian, or I'm not an exercise physiologist, or I'm not a psychologist, therefore I can't have an opinion. But
I've got an opinion.
We're all dealing with human behaviour all the time, so we can all have a thought.
So I'll come back to what I've said frequently, and that is I would ask the person, okay, if this is your goal, if you're at point A and you want to get to point B, what are the elements from getting to A to B that you don't like, and what are the elements that you like? Work out what a person doesn't like to do from getting A to B. And then if I was a coach, I'd be creative. So one of the things is with football, for example, like they never used to touch balls in pre-season until about February. All they did was run. Well, now they run with footballs. And it's, you know, and so doing things creatively, as you said, Craig, getting people to do things that that are new. And I think that's what will break the cycle. But having said, you know, I've said all along that you've got to do things that you like, I'm with you as well that in order to get from A to B, you've got to make sacrifices and do some things that you don't like.
There was an article in The Age last week, I think it was last week, or might have even actually been earlier this week, on about seeing a psychologist and being able to recognize that that's not just for the mentally ill. And it's funny that we're talking about this, which wasn't a planned lead-in, but today, actually, on Thursday, they released the Australian Psychological Society have now released a brand new campaign, which is called Believe in Change. And so that gets officially launched, I think, today. So they had one of our triple Olympic swimmers, Belinda Hocking, speak, who's just retired, just about her journey. They had Mia Friedman up there. And the whole thing is about saying that everybody can make a change, and it isn't just about being mentally unwell.
So this is a segue into something I was going to talk about. So it's not.
Well, can we put on hold? Because I know that you want to launch down a road. You said before in the green room, I want to talk about something to you too, but I'm not going to talk about it on air. So you just bite your bottom lip for the moment. Also, who's that from? We've got a couple of people asking questions about time trials and 5K runs and preparation and bulging discs. We've got you there. We're going to come to you. If you've got a question, you want to send it through as well, 0433 98 11 16. If you want to join the conversation, Mark will be leading the way after this, which is, it's a first, so don't go anywhere because it's either going to be groundbreaking or horrible. Stick around.
I feel good. I knew that I would. On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Larder and Mark Fabreo.
So good. So good.
Oh, dear. Just before we came back on air, a little heated discussion about fidelity between my co-host. Just a little bit of, you know, the cat.
No, that's not true.
Well, that's how I saw it from over here, and my reality's my reality. Now, a couple of questions off the SMS. Mark spoke about women heads of states. More women heads of state, less wars. You're kidding. They're just as violent.
That's actually not true.
Well, how do you know? When I don't think a single woman has started a war.
But if we're talking about women being just as violent, again, we look at hormones and chemicals and all that stuff. That's actually not true when we look at the more violent crimes or that. They've done studies on this.
Thanks,
but,
Jackie.
Yeah. I think there are violent women, but
there are.
I think if we compared, I think we might find that's a competition that men don't want to win, but we'll win. I have a bulged disc in my lower back. Any suggestions on why to repair this? Well, none of us are doctors or physios, but I've got a stuffed back, have lots of bulging discs. So all I'm going to say to you is listen to your body, obviously get treatment, obviously go get, you know, some kind of prescription for that. But these days, the general thinking is as much movement and mobility as you can within reason. The old days of kind of just sitting around till you get better, they're kind of done. Swimming is good. Walking, believe it or not, for a lot of us is good. And doing strength training that's appropriate around that. One thing you don't want to do with a lower back injury is say, well, I'm not going to go to the gym for 6 months, because all we see is a lot of muscle wasting that doesn't need to happen. So glutes and upper back and chest and all of those things as well. So a little bit of training, but you really need to get that attended to by somebody.
Do you think on that, though, I think a lot of people underestimate the value of walking, of just moving. And you, yes, you know, you make the point of doing it and people say, oh, but that's not exercise. But it is.
100%. Movement is movement.
Yeah.
People don't understand that, whether or not it's incidental activity, occupational activity, structured exercise at the gym, movement is movement. And your body doesn't go, oh, this is walking, this is not exercise.
Mm-hmm.
All your body does is work around movement and adapt accordingly, depending on what you're doing, how much and how intensely.
There was a very important study published this week on, you know how there's this saying, sitting is the new smoking.
Mm.
Well, it isn't. And this paper was published which proves it. Basically,
doesn't cause lung cancer.
No. So sitting is only bad for people who are sedentary. Okay? So if you sit and you walk a bit, doesn't matter how long you sit for.
Walking. Well, I think they're talking about the fact that we are, in some ways, the sit-down generation. There are a lot of people. There's a suggestion that a fair percentage of the population spend about 23 hours a day sitting or lying.
Really?
Yep. Well, you think about a lot of people that obviously you lie all night. You get up, you sit, eat your breakfast, you sit in the car on the way to work or the train. You sit at work all day. You sit down for lunch. You sit down for dinner. Sit down to watch the telly. Then you go to bed. So there's a lot of people, not 90%, but there's a fair percentage of people who aren't upright and walking for even an hour a day.
And they're the people where sitting is detrimental.
Yeah.
But if you sit for 22 hours a day and you do physical activity for 1 hour and you move around for 1 hour, you don't suffer the problems.
I don't know about that. Well, I don't know that sitting or lying, I don't know.
I'll send you the paper.
Yeah, I'll send you my paper. Hey, now.
This so the common theme this morning,
this is for you,
with
Jax,
the discrepancies is Mark.
This is for you, Jax. If you suffer anxiety or depression, how do you set a goal or move to the next level? Simon.
Okay.
Good question. So, and first time SMS, so thanks for getting involved, Simon.
Yeah, so one of the most important things is to have a few strategies for your anxiety. So I don't know, obviously, whether he's got any management strategies or not. But if I'm setting a goal with someone who does suffer that, the number one thing I make sure of is wherever we set that goal, that person feels safe and secure as our starting point. And you don't overexpose them to things that are going to increase their anxiety. As far as the depression side goes, again, working with however that is impacting them, number one thing is to not push them too hard and give them something that's achievable at the start to help with that little bit of confidence. And you'd also be looking at their dialogue.
Off the SMS, I'm a 26-year-old male, Mark. You can do this. Love the show. I have a 5K time trial coming up. Any hints or tips or advice?
Okay, so what I would do is I would go and do a 5K time trial before the time trial. So it depends how long the person has until that. And then I would go to a track and I would try and run 400 meter reps, taking 25% off that time. So do you understand what I mean? So if you're running five, if you're running 5Ks in 25 minutes,
right,
work out what that pace is for 400.
Right.
Take off 25% and try and do your reps in that.
5Ks in 25 minutes. So you're running 5 minute Ks. You're running exactly 12 kilometers per hour.
Right. So work out what's 12 kilometers per hour for a 400,
mm-hmm,
and take 25% off that and run your 400 reps at that pace.
Oh, my God. Could it be more confusing?
No, it's simple.
And obviously.
Hey, all you need is a calculator.
Here's my advice. Just go run 5Ks and try and get better at it. Run on a good surface in good shoes. Keep a track of your time. Don't overtrain. Get some good shoes.
But obviously when Mark was explaining it to you and I must have just had blank faces because he's stopped and gone, do you know what I mean?
I had my abacus out and my computer and all my shoes off because I was using my toes to count as
Seems
well.
Seems simple to me.
Now, what have we got up here? We were talking about walking being exercise. Nobody watched me walk and say it's not exercise. 10.5 Ks per day in 79 minutes. That is getting along. All right, Mark, it's your time to shine.
Okay, so I'm going to say a name and you're going to tell me who this person is. Sarah Perkins. Do you know who Sarah Perkins is?
Sure do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't.
You don't know who Sarah Perkins is?
No, I don't.
Jackie, tell Craig who Sarah Perkins is.
No, well, are we talking about the same Sarah Perkins? Are we talking about the psychologist?
No.
No, okay. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about a footballer.
Right.
Right.
She plays for Adelaide.
Oh, yes, I know which one
we're talking
about.
Are we talking Aussie rules or soccer?
Aussie rules.
She plays forward.
She plays forward for Adelaide.
And she's got a boot and a half on her.
And she should be. And the reason why I bring it, I was watching her yesterday. Mm. And she should be almost the poster girl for physical activity. Now, Sarah Perkins is a large woman. She was skillful and she was overlooked in the draft. Because she is quite a big girl.
Mm.
Her GPS numbers are amazing. Mm. Her effort is amazing. And she's one of the she got picked up as a supplementary player for the Adelaide Crows. Mm. She's one of the best players in the competition. She isn't lean. She's big. She covers ground.
Yeah.
She ticks all the boxes. The reason why...
And her technique is pretty good, actually.
And the reason why I wanted to talk about her, Craig, is what is the one thing in the people you train, or Jackie, the people, that frustrates them about progression in physical activity, in participating in sport or into doing, or in their quest to get fit?
What's the one thing...
Well, what do they worry about the most?
Well, quite often their body composition.
Correct. So people... often say, this exercise, I'm not losing any weight.
Right.
Well, the reason why I bring up Sarah Perkins is because she is the absolute beacon for people who can be fit, healthy, without necessarily looking like somebody who's sculpted out of granite.
Mm.
And I think people should.
It's an example we wouldn't have used. But
well, I'm really impressed with this girl. She got overlooked.
Yeah.
She's great to watch, I have to say. You do watch her. And
I think that's such... Sorry, Jack.
You do watch her and her actual skill level and the depth she can get on her kicks and, you know, and she's clearly loved by her teammates. Like, it's very...
How tall would she be?
She'd probably be about 5'10".
Yeah.
Is she a forward, did you say?
She's a forward.
Yeah, she's a forward.
And she...
She's probably kicked the best goal, one of the best goals so far. It just kept going.
Mm.
But the reason I brought her up as an example is because she's very fit, but she's not necessarily lean, and you don't have to be lean to get the benefit of exercise.
Yeah.
Off the SMS, Sarah Perkins lost 35 kilos to get where she is now. That's from Damo. So thanks for that little insight, Damo. And great work, Sarah, and obviously doing something very well. And she's been full forward for the last 14 months, according to Jack, our researcher/producer. Let's go to Mark in Greenvale. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
G'day. How going, guys?
Good.
I listen to you regularly, and I'm just curious, because I want to speak about motivation. It's funny you were talking about mental health, and I'm not working at the moment, and sometimes I find it hard to even get motivated to get up in the morning, let alone to do any sort of physical activity or whatever. And I'm just wondering, I mean, is routine the secret to do that, or is there a trick or a secret to stay motivated and stay positive? Or
I'll start, and then the psychologist will jump in, because we both work in this space a little bit, in that I'm always, my job is essentially helping people change, as is Jackie's. My take on motivation, in the sense that we talk about it typically, we often say, oh, he was motivated, or I feel motivated, or I went and saw Jackie and I got pumped up and I was motivated, or I saw the Australian Tennis Open, or I watched somebody do a run a marathon, I got motivated. We're talking about, quite often talking about an emotional state, that is the way that we feel, versus motivation being a reason to do something. So I'm coming from the point, the perspective of how we feel. I feel motivated. That firstly, motivation's a great thing, Mark, but the problem is, in the sense we're talking about it, it's short-lived. It's short-lived. So it comes and goes, which is the reason why so many people lose weight. One of the reasons so many people lose weight, regain it, set New Year's resolutions, don't follow through, set goals, don't achieve them, set more goals, don't achieve them, and so on. So part of the challenge for us is to find a way to keep doing what works, that is being productive, proactive, efficient, effective, in the absence of what we call motivation. And you're right. You know, having those habits or those routines hardwired into our subconscious, where that's just our new version of normal. You know, people say to me, how do you stay motivated to go to the gym all the time because you're super old and your body's broken? And the answer is, I don't need to stay motivated because it's hardwired into my kind of normal operating system. So part of it is understanding that, I believe anyway, that you need to be able to keep doing what works even in the absence of the emotional state of motivation. And that part of that is just creating habits over time.
Yeah, I think the question I usually have for people with motivation is, what's causing you not to be motivated? So what are the things that you're using maybe as excuses? So if it's your dialogue of you think you can't do it, is it it's going to be too hard? The task itself might be too big. So I would first start with what are your demotivators? Motivation also comes from a chemical in our brain called dopamine, which helps us stay motivated. Now, you don't need to have a lot of really big things to kickstart that. So anything that makes you feel a little bit good will actually contribute to your motivation. So instead of going from 0 to 100, if you want to, whatever your goal is, let's say it is to go and run a 10K race or something like that, the motivation might be, you know what, just get out and start moving first, and then you put a little reward on the end. So it might be, okay, I'll walk and I'll get something at my favorite, I'll go and get a coffee at my favorite cafe. It might just be sitting outside reading a book. So you've got to have, at the start, some little external rewards help with it. But after a while, what'll happen is that internal motivation will take over and you won't need those external rewards.
Thanks for your call, Mark. When we come back, we're going to talk about life after 40 as an athlete, a weekend warrior, somebody who's training, somebody who wants to function optimally into their twilight years. There's two people in the studio who fit into that. Three people in this studio who fit into the 40 or older category. So we're going to talk about how to stay in shape and possibly even get in better shape as we age.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo. So good,
I got you. Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Craig Harper's my name. Professor Mark Fabreo is in the house, as is Jackie Lada. If you want to chat with us, hey, give us a call, 9429 1116. Or if you're a bit of a scaredy cat, 0433981116, send in a sneaky little SMS. And we won't even say your name. Now, we're an ageing generation. I saw a thing, transhumanism. Have you heard of that, Jack?
Transhumanism? No, yeah, I haven't heard that terminology.
Well, it's a thing where they're talking now about pie in the sky stuff of, you know, biology and technology merging, Mark. You would have heard of this vaguely in the space of AI, but where, you know, we're regenerating and can create all kinds of bits and pieces to whack on humans. So in 100 years from now, we'll be cyborg-like. But we are an aging generation. And apart from, putting computers and bits of computers in us to live longer, what are some of the very real challenges we face kind of 40 and onwards? And what can we do?
So the first couple of things that we need to recognise is the ageing, even though we're trying to delay the ageing process, it is occurring. And two things at least, I'll just speak at least in generic terms, but also just for men. So the first thing is you get hormonal changes. So testosterone and the growth elements of your body decline, number one. Number two, what happens is that you get an aging of your tendons, but not so much your muscles. So the first thing you've got to recognize as you're getting older is that you're not going to be able to do the things that you did before you were 40 because your body simply will not allow you to do it. And the main thing that you'll start to see if you try and maintain those areas is you'll get tendinopathies and you'll get injuries to where your tendons and your muscles articulate. Jackie, what about mentally? What happens mentally as you get older?
Yeah, well, I think what you've got to have a look at mentally is as you get older is the time of life that you're in. A lot of people from 40, a good majority will have kids that are now school-aged. So life becomes a lot busier. You don't have as much time as you may have had before to yourself. So you might have to change the exercises that you're doing. We should, at 40 and above, mentally you should be far more mature because your brain has now finished growing for at least sort of 10, 15 years, which means that your emotional maturity, we often say for full emotional maturity of an adult female, it's about 38, for a man, 43. And what we're talking about when we say that is that you are aware of your emotions, you are able to appropriately respond to them, and you make good decisions based on those things. So that's why we talk about it from that age.
And you in this room would say that it'd probably be for a man 54, because you often say that Craig and I act like children. So
the other thing we factor in from a psychological perspective is the stress levels after that age, because most people from a career perspective are really starting to take on a lot more responsibility and are moving into more senior roles in whatever field they're in from 40 through to the end of their working career. So they're the two biggest things that we see increase from a mental perspective after the age of 40.
Jackie, you and I both know a man not too recently, a friend of ours, an acquaintance, a colleague, who had a knee operation and found out only this week. And we know he's got a little bit of an exercise issue and
yes,
maybe anorexia, athletica, whatever that is.
Yes.
Bit obsessed. He only found out this week, this friend of ours, that he can never run again.
Yep.
Are there any impending problems with our friend that you might see?
Yeah, well, I would say one of the things might be a little bit of athletic identity because unable to do the things that person would normally do.
Mm.
I'd say we're probably going to sit down and have a coffee at some stage, maybe a group therapy.
A little bit of a hug, a few tears, a little bit of a rub on the back.
Gee, that guy, I've heard that guy's an outstanding human being.
he's an outstanding human being who can't run anymore.
But in all seriousness, I, like, without outing you, Mark, which we've officially already done anyway, except for saying your name, that is very, very common once you get over the age of 40. If you have done a lot of exercise, like I see a lot of our footballers and our rugby players who have had, you know, pretty intense sporting careers, your whole life you have loved a certain form of exercise. When you get told that, and my dad was in a very similar position, he ran all the time and then was told, you better stop, otherwise you'll need a knee replacement, but he was too young.
Yeah.
That's so quite devastating news.
It is, but let me just go back to what you said before about, you know, the maturity of people. If I got told this 10 years ago, I'd almost fall into depression, seriously.
Yeah.
But I sort of said to myself, okay, well, I can still do lots of other things. I'm not in chronic pain. And, you know, I've seen Craig walk through the door some days where I'm really happy I'm not him because you looked in real pain with your back.
Mm.
So I'm not in chronic pain. I can still ride my bike. I can still swim. How many people a week go to their doctor and get diagnosed with a disease, cancer or something like that? I didn't get that. So I'm at the age where I went, I can't run. Okay, it's a bit of a pain in the backside, but I'll deal with it.
And you also, I think this is the other thing when we do start to get older, is you need to respect all parts of your body. You can't just keep pounding it. So if you are someone who runs, and you might be running really well, but you need to really think about offloading some as well. So by doing some pool sessions or by going for a walk, I think you do have to be smarter with listening to your body as you get a lot older, because it's telling you a lot more things. It's had, you know, 40 plus years of wear and tear.
Off the SMS, just a quick one. Craig and Jackie, really enjoying the show. And you too, Mark. I'll chuck that in. Craig and Jackie and what's his name. Love the show, listening on the app, on my walk. I've got something of value. I'd like to like your thoughts and feedback on. Do you have an email address? Damien in Sydney. Now, Damien in Sydney and others, if you'd like to send us an idea or a question or perhaps a suggestion of something we should explore on the show, just go to Science of Sport SEN 1116 on Facebook, Science of Sport SEN 1116, and you can just send us a private message or even post it publicly if you want, or you can send, like I said, send a private one, and Jackie, our producer, will get back to you and we'll look into it. Let's go to Blair on line 7 in Glen Iris. Morning, Blair.
G'day, how are you going?
Good, man.
Good. I'm just wondering if, as you're getting older, the injuries you sustained earlier in life, do they have a greater effect on your ability to exercise, or is that just something that I'm feeling?
It depends on what the injuries are, for sure. But
how it was managed when you did it.
But obviously having an injury versus not having an injury in that particular part of your body is going to impact you. So, for example, when I was 26, I tore my right pec off the bone. Fair to say that from that day, my bench press and my pressing movements have not been the same. And, in fact, I've got one of my pecs is shorter than the other, so there's a little bit of a difference visually. And, yeah, it makes a difference. But it depends, I guess, on the injury and how you recover from that injury.
It does. It depends on what injury you do. And there's always scar tissue when an injury repairs. So it kind of depends.
What's your injury, Blair?
I've broken both legs, destroyed an elbow, and I dislocated a shoulder all in separate crashes.
Wowza.
Crashes on a bike?
I was semi-professional cyclist.
Right, yeah. Okay, if the legs mended well, the bone injuries shouldn't theoretically affect you, but the joint injuries are always going to be a problem, because you will have tendons and muscles and cartilage that doesn't always repair. That's why I can't run anymore, because I've got a cartilage injury and it will never repair. So I would suspect that the bone injuries shouldn't really affect you, but it's the joint injuries that worry me a little bit.
And just be careful with any impact stuff. You can still train intensely, but just watch the impact stuff to your skeleton.
I think in the question that we're talking about is exercising over the age of 40, bone health is something that you always need to be aware of. As well, because certainly for women, we see a lot more osteoporosis and things like that as you get older. So I think your bone health is really important as you get older.
It's easy to check that too. If you have a DEXA scan.
I'm having one on Monday.
Yeah. So the DEXA scan will tell you whether or not, will give you your age and then your bone health age.
Now, there's actually a company that does that, a mobile. They do a mobile DEXA scan. They come out with a truck and someone can contact me from there. We might give you a plug, because it's really worthwhile.
Can I also say that at the Garvan Institute where I work, you can go to the website, and the bone division have developed a Know Your Bones. It's a online survey, and you can then answer these questions, and it will estimate whether or not you're susceptible to osteoporosis. It's a really good resource.
Sounds like a good one. 9 minutes to 11 o'clock. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side of this. Ah, I feel good. I knew
that I wouldn't. On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Larder and Mark Fabreo. So good.
I got you. Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. I just want to send a quick thanks to Col from Seaford, who sent me a letter this week, handwritten letter at SEN. Col, you're a superstar, liked my book and likes the show and said nice things. So thank you very much for that. Off the SMS, Body Scan is the, and no affiliation. They were the place we're looking at. But as Mark said, there are lots of places around. Mark, quick one for you. How do I, or Jackie, how do I handle aging 60 years old, maintain intensity? intensity program, jogging 6Ks and do weight-bearing stuff. How do I know when it's okay to ease up?
Well, listen to... I mean, it's very simple. You we put too much science in it. Listen to your body. If you're tired, back off.
We're not going to get through all the SMSs today. There's
lot. And you can train pretty hard for pretty long. My mum's 77 and she... For a 77-year-old, trains like a maniac.
That's great.
Like a maniac for a 77-year-old. Yeah. But if she was a 40-year-old, what she's doing is still relatively intense and very 4 days a week, never stops.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know what her biological age. I know that's a bit of a wanky term, but she certainly isn't 77.
And may I just add quickly, doing that at that age is so good for mental acuity and for staving off any dementia-related disorders. Exercise is so good for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly is.
As is good food. Good food makes a massive difference too.
As is good sleep.
Yeah, well, sleep's actually the biggest one. If you want to stave off dementia and some of those degenerative diseases, sleep is... I think people are finally starting to understand how important sleep is to absolutely everything that we do.
Have we done on our last break? I think we are. I'm just having a debate. Yes, we are. And maybe something like, you know, doing things where you were saying before in the break, Mark, how good running is for bone density. A lot of people think, oh, you shouldn't run. It's bad. It's actually done the right way. Mm-hmm. Done the right way. Anybody, you know, if they don't have an injury like you have, anybody can run. There's a guy that gets around Bayside who runs past my joint. Got to be 70. Got to be 70. He shuffles, but he's very efficient, and I don't know how far he runs, but he runs far. I would say he's cranking out regular 10K runs and shuffles along, headphones in, you know, and he's no gazelle, but he's out there doing it, and he's...
And he'd get a nice little dopamine release to help with his moods.
You and your dopamine. You and your dopamine. The dopamine girl. What do you do to get dopamine?
Oh.
What's your... Do you have a strategy around, like... feel good stuff for you?
Yeah, lots of things. I always make sure I keep reading in my life. Like, I love reading and learning new things.
And watching Suits.
Yep, I do. You know, you have to have, you were saying the same thing, a little bit of escapism. Mm. So having some downtime, because you can't do everything that's always up and moving.
My show is very polarizing. My favorite show right now is Vikings, and people either love it or hate it.
Yeah.
Because it's particularly violent.
I've heard that it's violent, so I can't watch it. So, and I'm very good with my sleep. And sometimes I think having some time just to sit outside and just, you know, I'll take a nice cup of tea or something out there. That's quite relaxing.
We were speaking before about motivation and, you know, how to maintain it, or do you maintain it, what we do in its absence. Are some people, I don't know if this is the right question, but you'll get it. Are some people naturally just more motivated? They just seem to be more up?
Yeah, I think if you've grown up in a household or with a life where you haven't had a lot of external stress. So if the earlier in life you have stress put upon you, whether that's growing up in a home that's very violent or, you know, not as stable, that makes a massive difference. So for me, I grew up in a very relaxed house. It was very fun. I didn't have parents that argued, so I was very fortunate. Mm. So because of that, I think sleep is the other thing. Because I've always been someone who gets good sleep, I get up and I'm ready to take on the day. So it's a number of things, but environment is very big on that.
We were talking, Mark, about life after 40, physically, we've got to look after ourselves. What's the age where you can kind of get away with it until? You know, where you can kind of, do you know what I mean? Because there is a, you know, you can kind of do not much and you'll be all right.
Yeah,
you can turn it around. What's the age?
Oh, well, I can only look, I mean, personally.
Guessing.
And I think guessing it's around 40, actually.
Yeah, I do too.
I didn't feel, I actually did not feel any different from when I was like 39 to when I was 25. But then 40 to 50 was a decade where things started to change. Like I needed to wear glasses.
Stuff accelerates, doesn't it?
It does.
It accelerates.
You get a niggling injury, it doesn't go away. You don't have a good night's sleep, you feel it. I mean, you two don't drink, but if I drank too much, it would be 3 days instead of 1 day.
a late night.
I hate late nights. I don't have them anymore.
But I was going to say, but what is now your definition of a late night? This is turning into a geriatric show now.
Midnight.
But
Yeah. If I go to bed at midnight,
I've been cranking out Zeds for 3 hours by midnight. Hey, we got to go. Coming up after 11 o'clock, the first serve. After that, Sunday Sports Central with Rowan Connolly between 12 and 2. And then the JLT series continues here on Melbourne's Home of Footy between 2 and 7:30pm. Thanks to Mikey, thanks to Jackie, thanks to Jackie in the studio, and Professor Mark Fabreo in the studio. Do you want to plug anything, either of you two?
No, but thanks to you, Craig.
Oh, thanks. I do what I can. Jackie, thank you. See you next week, folks. Enjoy your week.